Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine here with attorney Joseph Roble from Joseph Roble Limited, the Chicago bankruptcy law firm. This is the Chicago Bankruptcy Update, featuring information, news, and updates in bankruptcy law. Financial troubles are stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you are considering filing a bankruptcy, Joseph Roble will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide the information that you need to allow yourself to decide if bankruptcy makes sense, has value, and is the best way to provide relief from your financial woes. For a library of information about bankruptcy and all the topics we discuss on this podcast interview, please visit chicagobankruptcy.com. This is the August 2017 Bankruptcy Question and Answer Podcast, and a few of the topics we'll cover today are in line with the following subjects and questions. First, when can a bankruptcy be removed from my credit report? Will I lose my citizenship or be deported if I file for bankruptcy? If you file for bankruptcy, is every credit card you have included? Also, can another party collect from me while I am in bankruptcy and they're suing me in small claims court? Or another very popular question, if I file for bankruptcy, can I keep my home and can I keep my car? Again, I'm here with Joseph Roble. We do this program once a month, and he has been a practicing attorney since 1973 with experience in a wide variety of matters relating to individuals and families. Presently, he concentrates his practice on consumer bankruptcy. Joseph Roble helps clients get out of debt and get a fresh financial start. He's an active member in several bar associations and is on the bankruptcy panel of the pro bono program of the Chicago Volunteer Legal Services. Joe Roble earned his BA in psychology from Northwestern University, and in 1973, he earned his JD from DePaul University School of Law. He also served the U.S. Army Reserve 363rd Civil Affairs Unit. Let's say good afternoon, Joseph Roble.
Good afternoon, Nick. I'm all set to go with our Q&A for today.
All right. Our first person wants to know about what happens if the bankruptcy was filed before a judgment was entered. They want to know what happens to the discharge. And the question is, the person says, I was sued for a claim relating to myself and my business. I filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy to stop the proceedings, and the bankruptcy case is scheduled for discharge in 2 weeks as the party suing me never showed up in court. What happens to the case now? They are listed in the bankruptcy, and they received notice. There was no objection to the dischargeability. So.
Okay, so there's two parts to that question, one against the debtor individually and one against the business. The filing of any type of a bankruptcy stops all collection proceedings by all creditors. So this particular lawsuit will never proceed any further. It'll eventually get dismissed off the state court call, and the completion of the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, which takes roughly 4 months or so, will result in the discharge in that debt, which was a lawsuit when the case was filed, but before the lawsuit was simply a claim for money owed. That debt is gone, discharged, wiped out. Creditor can never collect, and that's against the debtor. Now, this debtor owns a business. If the business was simply a DBA, if they were doing business under a business name and they were not incorporated in any manner, then the debt is also discharged. Everything is stopped. Nothing else happens in state court. But if this debtor's business was a corporation and the particular debt was the responsibility of the debtor and the corporation, which you'll see many times on, let's say, a store lease where the landlord has the corporation sign and the president. You'll see it sometimes on credit cards, et cetera. If it's against the corporation, then the filing of the bankruptcy didn't stop the lawsuit against the corporation. The creditor, if the creditor wanted to enter into judgment and try to collect against the corporation, if there are assets to do so.
All right. So that is interesting. You know, there's a lot of people out there who do have business interests and DBAs and small corporations, so good thing to get questions like that. All right, our next question is someone who said that they were just sued in small claims court and they lost. It says, if I'm in bankruptcy, can the other party collect for me still?
Okay. With oftentimes with many of these questions, a little bit of information missing. So if the lawsuit was, if the debt on which the small claims court lawsuit was based was incurred before the filing date of the bankruptcy, then this the debt's discharged, wiped out, and the creditor can't collect. But if the claim for which the small claims court lawsuit was filed was incurred after the filing date of the bankruptcy, then the bankruptcy did not discharge that debt. The bankruptcy will discharge debts in existence on the date of filing. So if there was money borrowed after the bankruptcy, if the debtor fell behind on rent after the bankruptcy, again, if it's a debt that it was incurred after the bankruptcy, then the bankruptcy would not help. So what we don't know here is when this whole thing started.
Important details, very important details.
Let me bring up something else. One of the things to think about with bankruptcy is it's like a snapshot, a photograph. On the day you filed, what did you own? On the day you filed, what were your debts? Those are the important issues to determine what debts are discharged and what you can keep and what you cannot keep.
Mm-hmm. What if the person wants to, well, what if the person has not yet had their discharge but filed something? Can they withdraw the original filing and wait and do another filing if something happens in the process?
So you're talking about the party that brought the lawsuit?
Or the person who wants to do the bankruptcy. So you say, look, the snapshot is X. After the snapshot, the world comes crashing down on someone.
Okay, I understand that. And you see that sometimes with medical bills. People get sick after filing, and boom, they have debts, and they can't put them in the bankruptcy because they happened after the date of filing. A Chapter 13 can easily be stopped, dismissed, and you can start a new one. In Chapter 7, if you have an asset that you are going to lose in your Chapter 7, and with my office, you're going to know that going in. You're going to do the Chapter 7 with your eyes open, knowing that you're going to lose some money, knowing that you're going to lose a car, and you're going to decide to do it anyway. If you have an asset case, you're not going to be able to withdraw that bankruptcy because that asset now belongs to the trustee, and it just can't be done. But most Chapter 7 bankruptcies, there aren't assets, so you could dismiss it and then refile at a later date. So that's a good question.
Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen. You think all your bills are there, and then the next day you get the big whopper. So never know what can happen. All right, our next question. What do I do if I paid for a bankruptcy, but I never filed, and I haven't received any of my money back from my attorney? Okay, the detail on this one says that I was planning on filing bankruptcy in 2015, and I ended up not having to file. I got a bill where the attorney charges were itemized. I had over $700 credit, but they never returned my money. I am sending a request for my refund, but after almost 2 years, they have returned it. No, they have returned it. Do I have a right to keep it?
Again, we're missing a little bit of information. The answer to this problem, whether this particular person is entitled to the $700 of credit never used, will depend on what they signed with the attorney. I can assume that, as with most lawyers, you're going to sign a retainer agreement, an attorney-client agreement, a contract for services, whatever it is, indicating what you're going to pay for, what your money covers, what the firm will do for you. Most of those agreements will indicate what happens if you don't proceed. It could say that whatever you've paid is forfeited. Sorry, you don't get any money back. It could say that we will give you a refund for whatever you haven't used. So the answer to that question depends on what they signed. What I would suggest to this particular person would be to make a complaint with the commission of the state in which they live that licenses lawyers and submit to the commission what was signed and details what happened. And then the commission will write a letter to the attorney. The attorney is required to answer. And if there is a refund that there should be sent to this prospective debtor, then the attorney will do it because you can lose your license. If the paperwork and the documentation shows that there is no money to be refunded, then that'll be determined too by the commission. So every state has an agency. In the state of Illinois, it's the Attorney Registration Commission that licenses lawyers, and that's a place for someone to go to without any cost to make a complaint if they think they're entitled to a refund from a lawyer.
There you go. Also, it might be a good idea to call that firm up and just rattle the cage a little bit, because sometimes people forget and there are innocent errors and omissions that are really no one's fault. So always good to ask. You never know what's going on. So
good
our
point,
next question
good point.
Is, it's true. I mean, I used to work in family law firms, so I can attest that, it may seem like my attorney has forgotten I exist. It's like, actually they probably have seven lines holding, people in every room and emails and things going. It's a busy life. So, all right, our next question is about credit cards. We all love credit cards. Some people want to keep their credit cards. Hey, especially if you've got one that you get points on. I have the Capital One card. I love it. I put everything on that sucker, and I get all sorts of points, and, it's a good thing. So, people are also concerned with their credit ratings and scores after a bankruptcy. So this person wants to know, if you file bankruptcy, do you have to get rid of all those credit cards? If there's no balance on a card, or if there's one you don't want included, is that possible?
The bankruptcy code requires that in bankruptcy petition, which, as with so many things in the law and where the government gets their hands on, it's a lot of paperwork, 50, 60, 70 pages thick. In that petition, you list every single debt where money is owed. If you have a credit card with a balance that you want to keep, you have to list the credit card. If you have a credit card with zero balance, it does not need to be listed. Now, the question then is, on that zero balance card, will you be allowed to use it after filing? And to give you a lawyer's answer, the answer is yes and no. Depends on the creditor. Some companies, because you filed a bankruptcy, even though your filing had nothing to do with them, continue to have you as a customer. Others will allow you to to continue. So that's something that you would need to check with the company after the bankruptcy is filed. And then the other issue about listing all your creditors, so many of my clients will say, I don't want my mortgage company to know. I don't want to list my mortgage. I don't want my finance company on my car to know. I don't want to list them. And I have to tell them all the same thing, that these are debts. They're in existence on the day you file. They are required to be listed. We can't leave them out. But they really don't care that you're filing. They want your money. They don't want your house back. They don't want your car. They make money off the interest. So that's really not going to be an issue.
Really, especially, you know what, Joe? A little birdie just flew by my desk and dropped a post-it note that says, reaffirmation agreement, question mark?
Okay, with regard to...
credit cards. I mean, we talked about reaffirmation agreements with car loans.
I got it. Credit card, yeah, there, you can only reaffirm a debt that... A normal credit card doesn't have security. It's simply a promise to pay, so there's nothing to reaffirm. You reaffirm a mortgage, not very often, although you can. We don't think it's a good idea. I've had long dissertations about that. You need to reaffirm a vehicle, but you can't reaffirm a credit card because there's no collateral. You could have possibly a secured Visa, secured MasterCard, where there's money sitting in a bank account. We don't see that much, and you could reaffirm that, but it's almost a non-issue.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting when I first read this question, I thought, you know, do you have to list the credit card with a zero balance? And in my head, I would have thought maybe yes, because the amount of credit that you have on that card, your ability to spend, is considered an asset in a lot of areas. But that, you know, in damage to credit litigation, there is a value to the asset of being able to, you know, charge money and use a card like that. So, again, you know, depending when you're wearing your bankruptcy hat or a different lawyer hat, there's different codes and different laws. So, you know, where in one instance that you might be an asset, you know, in another, it might not.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not sure about that. My first reaction is that I can't see that as being an asset, because the right to use that card is exclusive to you, and nobody else really can have access to that. And it's got no value to anybody else. And again, if it's
very
the balance
good
is zero, if the balance is zero, there ain't no debt.
Right. I would still argue it's an asset to me, though, you know. But that's
let's wait till we're off the air.
Get my credit damage expert from California is an interesting guy. You should meet him. All right. Well, anyways, as we've talked about some of this, you know, one of the things that we can all agree on is these bankruptcy laws can be rather complicated, and the procedures involved and the documentation required can be overwhelming, especially if you're unfamiliar with specific bankruptcy law. Joseph Robel has over 40 years' experience representing clients in consumer bankruptcy, and what that means to you is that your financial situation will be properly analyzed. Joe and his staff understand that you're probably anxious about financial problems, tired of harassment by creditors, and uncertain whether bankruptcy filing is really what you need. Well, if bankruptcy will help your financial situation, you'll be properly advised for which chapter you may qualify. At Joseph Robel Limited, the entire procedure from beginning to end will be clearly explained to you, and you'll receive a What to Do Next letter at or after your initial consultation, and that will guide you through the entire process from the beginning to the end. Now, if you don't need to file for bankruptcy, they're going to tell you that. Joseph Robel Limited is not in the business of putting people into the bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. Joseph Robel Limited is a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy. It's not a big bankruptcy law factory, and you won't get lost in the office. You will be treated as a human being with the courtesy, dignity, and respect you deserve. The mission at Joseph Robo Limited is to have you take control over your finances through the proper use of these bankruptcy laws. Joseph Robo Limited has offices located conveniently all over the Chicagoland area, in the Chicago Loop, Chicago Rosemont, and the suburbs of Burr Ridge, Deerfield, Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So, anywhere you are in the Cook County, Will, DuPage, Kane, Lake, LaSalle, Kendall, or Lake County areas, you can find a convenient location. All right, let's hop back to our program here and move on to our next question, which is a very common question. People want to know about homes and vehicles. You know, some of the most money that we spend as consumers are on our homes and vehicles. And an individual who wants to know about them says that they owe a large amount in credit card debt. Their home and their vehicle, they've never been late on them. So they want to know, can they file a bankruptcy? Would I lose my home and my car or anything that is still in good standing?
You know, when I interview clients, I will sometimes say to them, after they ask me some questions, I will tell them, if we could take this wall here in the office and make it a one-way mirror and put you behind that wall, and then you could stand there and watch and listen to other clients that come in. Of course, that's not proper. It's, you know, there's confidentiality. But if that could be done, you would see that the questions you're asking me, many people ask, the feelings that you have about doing this bankruptcy, many people have the same bad feelings. So one of the most common things that people say, once they decided to themselves, you know what, I really should do Chapter 7, wipe out my debts, get on with my life, but I don't want to lose my car, I don't want to lose my house. So a client will walk in and say, I want to do Chapter 7, get rid of my debt. I want to keep my house, I want to keep my car. And the answer is what lawyers will tell you. It depends. It depends on the value. It depends on what is owed against the vehicle or the mortgage against the home. And it depends on the state in which you live. So if you've heard advertisements on television from the large bankruptcy law firms that advertise bankruptcy, and they tell you, file bankruptcy, get rid of your debt, keep your house, keep your car, what they're saying is correct, but it's not complete. What they should be telling you is, file bankruptcy, keep your house, keep your car, comma, depending on what the house and car are worth. So that we have to analyze, get a market value from a realtor. What could you sell your house for? What's the mortgage balance? If you sold the house, paid closing costs, broker's commission, paid off the mortgage, how much money is left? And every state has a different amount that allows you to keep if your house was sold. If you're within that dollar amount, you can file Chapter 7, keep your house. Same thing with a car. There's really no cost involved in a car. There's an exemption amount like on a home. What do you owe? What's the car worth? What's left over? And will a trustee take it from you if you're within a dollar amount? And that varies even within a state. It'll vary from area to area. Most of the trustees in our jurisdiction here in the Chicagoland area won't touch a car unless they can walk away with $5,000, which is actually over the exemption. What this points to is a few things. Knowing values is very important. It's critical for the attorney to have these determinations. Knowing balance is important. And an experienced bankruptcy attorney will know what is done and what is not done in the area in which he or she practices. So that's a very long answer for a question that could have had a three-word answer that says, it depends on the value.
Right. Right. It all depends, you know, and the same thing, every bankruptcy is unique, you know, just every situation is different. So, you know, I often say, if your neighbor or, you know, Aunt Maud experienced her bankruptcy, doesn't mean the same thing is going to apply to you. This is not one size fits all. Our next question is about wage garnishment, which actually is one of the main reasons people may decide to file off for Chapter 7 or 13. People are concerned about their wages being garnished and losing their job, but their employer knows there's garnishment out there. Anyways, this question is, can my wages be garnished for a debt that was included and listed in my Chapter 7 No Asset Bankruptcy, which was discharged 4 years ago? Further detail.
Let me interrupt you for a second. We're losing our connection a little bit. I don't know if it's just my end or not.
I can hear you just fine. So.
Okay, you can hear me. That's good.
All right. Yeah. So sometimes the buffering and the time, you know, it's all Friday, and then the computers, I don't know, they're tired. Anyways, this person says the Chapter 7 bankruptcy was discharged 4 years ago, and last week they received a summons for garnishment on a debt that was listed in the bankruptcy, and it was included in the discharge. Is this legal, they ask. Can I be sued for debt already discharged in my no-asset bankruptcy, they ask. What steps should I take as soon as possible, they would like to know.
So the basic answer is that this debt was discharged, and this action should not have been taken, and it violates the terms of the discharge when the bankruptcy was completed. My suggestion would be to hire a local bankruptcy attorney who can bring an action to try to collect money for this violation of the discharge. If that's not feasible because of cost, I would say to just go into state court on the date that the garnishment is set and bring in the bankruptcy papers. That should stop the whole thing.
Okay. Good answer. All right. Next one. Person says that their mother passed away owing over $20,000 in credit card debt as well as some medical bills. Person wants to know, are my sister and I responsible for her debt if we use these cards for her? Can we file bankruptcy for her?
Okay, well, since she's not alive, I don't think you can file a bankruptcy for her. Those debts, this is, sorry to be facetious, but I thought it was a little bit funny. that's also a common question because people get worried. Now, I'm going to get stuck. My mom has this debt. Now I have to pay. So if this particular questioner and sister are not co-signers on the mom's debt, then those debts are not their responsibility. They belong to the mother's estate. If the mother didn't own anything for there to be a probate estate, then basically those debts essentially evaporate. They exist, but there's no way to collect against them. If there is an estate, let's say there's money that the mother had, a CD, bank accounts, a house, and that's going to be transferred to this person and the sister, then a creditor of the mother would be allowed to get paid from the estate, which could mean liquidating the house, getting it sold so the creditor can get paid, using the cash, using the bank accounts. So that's how that would work on the debts of a person that's deceased. And again, it's a very common question that people get very, very nervous about and usually results in not being a problem at all.
There you go. Yeah, and, you know, when someone passes away, the person who wants to collect the debt, you have to remember, it's not like they can just flip the switch where they go debt collecting. They have to pay, if they're hiring a lawyer to sue to collect a debt, they've got to pay that lawyer. That, you know, it's, there's a cost involved to these people who, you know, credit card companies and others. You know, they might send it off to a, you know, I guess a collection agency. But, you know, again, if the person is deceased and they don't have money, a lot of times they'll just, and I've experienced this personally, they just write it off and go away. So, but again, you never know what's going to happen. Anyways, we have two questions left. The next one is, when can a bankruptcy be removed from my credit report? Person filed in 2009.
Answer is, Chapter 7 comes off 10 years after filing. Chapter 13 comes off 7 years later. Then the follow-up question that people often ask is there some way to get it removed earlier? And the answer is no. All you can change on a credit report is information that's incorrect.
Okay. My last question, their last question. Do I lose, you know, citizenship? And a lot of this has come up in a lot of different areas of law. One of my personal injury clients says he's got people who want to know if they have a personal injury case, are they going to be deported if they're not, you know, if they're illegal citizen. It's interesting. This person wants to know, do I lose my citizenship in the U.S. if I apply for bankruptcy? And I know there's someone else out there thinking, if I do bankruptcy, am I not, if I'm not documented and not here legally, am I going to be hauled away? It's a common question we're seeing.
Well, the bankruptcy code doesn't require being a U.S. citizen to file. You have to be a resident. So the filing itself will not result in loss of citizenship. The Constitution gives everyone a right to file a bankruptcy. You can't even sign it away. A creditor that gives you a loan agreement where they're lending you money, and that agreement says that you can't file a bankruptcy on this debt, you got to pay me, that's unconstitutional. So you will not lose citizenship, which is a huge deal. I mean, it's always been a huge deal. Citizenship in this country is something special, and it's a fear that people have, but bankruptcy will not result in that at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. That wraps up all of those our questions that we have prepared. I have a question, though, and I'm going to just kind of, you know, this one's not really that far out of left field, but I wonder, you know, because when we talk about Chapter 13 reorganization and how long that can take, and you can still, you know, not necessarily get all of the debts wiped out, but significant portions in certain circumstances. I'm curious if you have more people who are looking for a 7 that go into a 13, or people who know about Chapter 13 and want to go that route. I'm just kind of curious if, you know, it's kind of half and half, or, you know, most people are Chapter 7 and a handful are Chapter 13. Just curious.
There are more Chapter 13s over the last 12 years since the bankruptcy code came into effect because of an income test. Most people, first of all, nobody ever wants to do this. Secondly, when people decide that it's something that will probably help them and they come in, they want to find out exactly how it works, most people will say to themselves, well, I'd like to do Chapter 7 and not have to pay. A lot of them don't understand or know what Chapter 13 is. And when I tell them that they can't do a 7 because their income is too high, because they can't pass the income test, get a little upset or a little fearful, but then I explain the benefits. Even if they have to pay back their creditors in full, they're stopping the interest, their monthly expenses are less, and sometimes they can qualify to do a Chapter 13 where they can pay 50 cents or 20 cents on the dollar. So 13 is a wonderful benefit for people who can't qualify for Chapter 7, and in terms of, like, statistics, like, you know, I can't really give you percentages.
Right. You know, the only other point that I wanted to make today is about credit rebuilding and how many programs, not necessarily programs, but there's information out there, including on our ChicagoBankruptcy.com website, a lot of blog articles and things talking about credit rebuilding and credit repair. And I can attest that to people that it is really easy to rebuild credit sometimes. You just have to be disciplined and know the right way of doing it. I know a lot of people who had credit cards, got rid of credit cards, and were just literally cash paying only for years until they want to go buy a house or something. And they think, oh, no, you know, my credit is not where it needs to be, and it's going to take me years and years and forever to rebuild the credit, which is actually not the case. And it's just something that you have to practice and do it well. Credit rebuilding is all very possible. So all these topics we talked about today, they're blog articles on the website. If you go to the area on the website where you can search, you just literally can ask your question, then we'll receive a whole pile of different articles and podcasts and information. So there's a lot of information on the website. All right, Joe, do you have any final thoughts for our fans and people who want to know about bankruptcy?
Final thoughts is don't be afraid of bankruptcy. If that's something that you think maybe I should do this, but you don't want to, which is very common, contact my office, 312-781-0996. Check my website, ChicagoBankruptcy.com. Get yourself some information. Come in and see us for a free consultation. We have 11 Chicagoland locations. We handle Cook and all the collar counties of Illinois. Come in for a consultation. We don't charge. We can give you advice, tell you if you need to do a bankruptcy, if it'll make sense for you, if it'll have value, which one you would qualify for, and explain everything from A to Z.
All right. Excellent. Phone number once again?
312-781-0996.
All right. Well, Joe, like always, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to being back next month with a whole fresh set of questions and answers.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Also, we want to remind people, if you find this podcast on social media, whether it be through the firm's Facebook page, LinkedIn, or Twitter, or you're just finding it because you found it on Google, please do your part and help share this information, because bankruptcy is something that can help so many people, but not everyone comes out and asks for that help directly. So it's always a kind thing to like and share. That is all. We will be back next month. Everyone have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.